And behind, just the big dye pots, piles of wool, and the cook fire. Nevertheless, Royce moved around the space, nudging the blankets and looking inside the pots, which were huge but still far too small for even a mirror to hide. "Where?" Adrian silently mouthed. Royce shrugged in frustration. He looked back down at the crates and the piles of wool. He had to be close. He wasn't in the room with them, which meant... Villar had led Royce on a merry chase across the rooftops of Rochelle. That tour of the city wasn't random. The mirror knew where he was going, what transom led to what windows, what ledges could be leapt to, and what streets were narrow enough to cross at a running jump. He'd been that way before. Villar has a thing for roofs. Royce looked up and pointed at the dome. Adrian's eyes widened. He shook his head. "Can't be. The golem is out there. Why doesn't it just climb up and kill him?" "Can't reach him."
"But you said the gargoyle..."
"The gargoyle was small. Well, smaller. And Gromgallimus had all kinds of ornaments and handholds. I don't think Novron can climb up the smooth walls of this temple. Villar, on the other hand, would have no problem. Probably been up there this whole time. That's why we haven't found him," Adrian whispered. "Now what?" Royce didn't answer. "The only way to stop that thing is to kill Villar. One of us has to get up there." Adrian looked out the door. The legs hadn't moved. "And that means the other has to distract the god." Adrian sighed. "You're the expert climber, so..."
"There you go again," Royce snapped.
"What?" Royce shook his head in disbelief. "Didn't we just talk about this? About your stupid habit of playing the hero? That's not grape juice on its legs."
"No. No, it's not."
Adrian's voice lowered. "But time's running out, and I don't see another option, do you? I can't climb up these sheer walls, but you can. Obviously, you should be the one to distract that thing, but that's not the point," Royce snapped.
"What is the point?"
"You don't have to be so eager. You should try to persuade me to be the bait out of self-preservation." Royce took a step closer to the door, to the marble legs. They were massive. Adrian smiled.
"You think if I go out there, I'm committing suicide?"
Royce nodded. Adrian shook his head. "I'm not. I have complete confidence. I'll be fine."
"And what makes you think that?"
"Because there are unicorns in my world."
"There aren't any stupid unicorns, Adrian."
"Yes, there are. I'm looking at one right now. And I know you're a very fast one." Adrian pulled off his cloak.
"Ready?"
"Villar probably heard all of this," Royce told him.
"Then I have nothing to worry about."
Royce held out Alverstan.
"Take this. It hurt the gargoyle before."
Adrian shook his head.
"You'll need it more than me, little unicorn. Ready?"
"Don't ever call me that again. Or when this is over, assuming you're still alive, I will kill you."
"Deal."
Adrian threw his cloak out the doorway. A marble foot came down, crushing the garment. Adrian dived directly between the pair of white, polished legs. His plan was to somersault to his feet and run, but the green grass beyond the door was an illusion. The turf lied about the rocks beneath its blades. Adrian slammed his shoulder against a hidden stone the size of a saddle horn, making him cry out in pain and killing his forward momentum. A moment was all he had before the golem turned and another foot came down. Adrian log-rolled downhill, feeling the ground jump with the golem's second failed attempt. Finding his feet, he ran for the thickets. The golem chased after him. Adrian wasn't certain it would. If Villar had heard their conversation, there was a good chance he might ignore the self-proclaimed decoy. Either Villar hadn't heard, or suspected the verbal planning was a ruse. Or maybe he simply didn't care. In any case, Adrian had the statue on his heels, a marble god he had no hope of outrunning, and couldn't fight. Hadrian plunged into the mass of thickets, hoping to slow the golem down. The thorns slashed him, tore his clothes, and cut his cheek just below his left eye. Like a rabbit chased by a wolf, he clawed his way into the underbrush, aiming for thicker branches and better cover. Behind him, the ground shook. Branches snapped and vines were ripped clear. Thorns didn't bother the god emperor. Royce didn't waste a moment. The instant the golem turned its back, he was out the doorway. A strong leap gave him a fingertip purchase on ancient decorative moulding. After that, he relied mostly on cracks. Small ones, to be sure, but there were many to choose from. He pulled himself up as fast as he could. Everything was working perfectly. Too perfectly. No plan ever unfolded so nicely. Why did the golem chase Hadrian? Vilar must have heard. He knows I'm the real threat. Unless... I'm not. Royce cleared the rim of the roof and ran up the curve to the peak of the dome. The roof of the temple was empty. Vilar wasn't there. Stones! Hidden beneath the brambles and old tree roots, Hadrian discovered a graveyard of tumbled slabs. Once part of the temple, these stones had fallen away and collapsed upon one another like playing cards. Three mostly buried slabs formed a hole that Hadrian crawled into. A deep cave would have been nice. A tunnel even better. What he found was little more than a pocket. Better than nothing. Peering out the opening, he watched the world grow brighter as saplings and brambles were ripped away by Novron the Great. The god was digging down toward him. Vilar wasn't on the roof, but he had to be nearby. Royce climbed back down and re-entered the temple. Hadrian couldn't survive much longer. Royce stood in the little room, frustrated. Vilar had to be there somewhere, but he couldn't find him, and Royce was almost out of time. I told you there were no unicorns! Royce looked at the smoldering coals of the fire. But the world is filled with vicious, merciless killers. Then he noticed the heaping piles of wool. I should know. I am one. Hadrian squeezed himself as deeply as he could into the stone burrow. The slabs were massive, far from trivial impediments, even to a 17-foot marble god. But Hadrian was reminded about Vilar's resolve as the golem grabbed the first stone and heaved it clear, tossing the giant granite block like a bag of grain. The second slab followed the first, leaving Hadrian exposed, his cozy refuge destroyed. He scrambled to his feet. There was no fighting the thing. All he could do was run and dodge. Hadrian watched Marble Novron, hoping he might be able to evade whatever attack it made. If he could, he'd try running again. The golem raised a fist to smash him with, but its arm didn't come down. Hadrian waited, but Novron continued to stand there perfectly still. Its eyes were blank, vacant, like a statue. Royce had been quick, just quick enough. Inching away from the marble god, Hadrian moved back up the slope. He found the ruined temple engulfed in flames. Black smoke and orange tongues of fire licked out the doorway. Royce was out in front of the door, dagger in hand, watching the place burn. What happened? Hadrian asked. Vilar wasn't on the roof, Royce replied, not taking his eyes off the doorway. And I sort of got tired of looking. How about you? Where's your playmate? Standing over in the thickets looking a lot like a statue. Hadrian peered into the smoke and flames. You think Vilar's dead? Royce shook his head. Not yet. No. Then why isn't the golem moving? Only a guess, but I think when the smoke reached him, Vilar panicked and broke the connection. You know where Vilar is, don't you? I can't prove it, but I think so, Royce said. If he wasn't on the roof, the only place left is underneath. Makes sense. It would have been hidden, Hadrian said. What would? The tomb. That's what this place is.
A monument or crypt to someone. This one was secret, so the entrance to the burial chamber is disguised. Vilar set his box to burning, then crawled inside to run the golem.
The two watched the fire grow. The inferno was 30 feet away, a distance required due to the heat. When the fire spread to the undergrowth, they retreated farther.
How did you figure out it was a tomb?
Hadrian pointed at one of the fallen slabs the golem had thrown, now only a few feet away. On it was chiseled a passage of text. Falkirk de Roche, first disciple of Bran, rest with Maribor.
Any idea who that is?
Royce shook his head. Must have been someone important, but I suppose, given enough time, even really important people are forgotten.
It could have been... He stopped, and then pointed. There!
Something moved just inside the doorway. It slowed, then collapsed, before getting outside.
Royce nodded. Now he's dead.
After the killer statue had inexplicably run away, Jenny took a few minutes to catch her breath. When the marble monster didn't return, she found two boys cowering in the carriage shop. They looked like good kids, the sort to help a woman who could barely get to her feet. They said they were Wardley Woffington's sons. After a good deal of coaxing, which ended when one recognized her, Jenny convinced them to come out. Once they did, she ordered them to build a stretcher and carry Armand Calder to a physician, which they managed with the skill of those desperate to have some normal task to concentrate on. After that, Jenny walked, very slowly, down the hill. She had no idea where she was going or why. The plaza was a gory scene, but maybe someone else might need help, and it was downhill. She reached the river's edge, but got no farther than the start of the paving stones, when everything finally caught up to her, and she broke down and sobbed. She wasn't alone. People began to spill back into the square from all corners. They came across the bridge, down Vintage Avenue, from Center Street, even through the alley between the gallery and the cathedral. All the faces were the same. Shock. Horror, bewilderment, sadness. No one could do much more than stare and cry. Hundreds of men, women, and children, most of whom were dressed in the blue clothes of the wealthy and noble, lay dead alongside those who had served them at the feast. Out of that sea of morbid faces emerged an oddity. Jenny saw him through blurry eyes. A portly fellow, with a salt-and-pepper beard, was dressed in a poorly fitted metal breastplate and carrying a sword. He dropped the weapon and ran toward her, his arms spread wide. He crashed into her, his embrace so tight she could barely breathe, his bushy beard pressed hard against her cheek. "I thought I'd lost you," he said. And when he pulled back to stare at her face, as if to assure himself it was really her, she saw tears of relief.
"I thought the same of you,"
she gestured at the plaza.
"But you weren't here. You were... looking for me?"
"I was." Leo stared into her eyes, his lips trembling.
"I thought you were dead. For more than 2 horrible weeks I lived with that pain. Then I got your letter. I gathered my men, and have spent the entire night and all of this day digging through every hovel, shop, and barn looking for you."
He started to laugh, then covered his mouth and shook his head.
"I was coming back because I heard about the attack, and here you are. I don't know how, but you are. Jenny, my love, where have you been?"
Jenny lingered on those two words. "My love."
"Leo, tell me, do you love me?"
The Duke's brows shot up.
"What a question. Didn't I just get done telling you I need to know? Do you really love me?"
she insisted, grabbing him by the arms and holding him fast. How can you ask such a thing? Because everyone says you married me for my money, or the crown.
That's not true. His voice was stern, his eyes growing dark and stormy.
Then why? Why do we sleep in separate rooms? Why on our wedding night didn't you come to me? That night, or any other? Why have you been so distant?
The storm faded, and Leo looked down. The expression on his face shifted to pain and embarrassment.
It is true. He doesn't...
I'm an old man, Jenny. Set in my ways. I don't like too many people. Even fewer like me. Living here, surviving in this place, it teaches you not to trust anyone. You learn early that people only take. They never give. Loyalty is a word that means, what can I get from you and for how long? I've had to guard myself. And I have. But it makes for a lonely life. But you're different. Knew it the moment I met you. So bright, cheerful, smart and open. You never asked how many servants I had, or how big my holdings were. That was so odd. She smiled. You never really asked anything of me, except which whiskey I liked best, and what was my favorite food.
Rye for the drink, and apple-braised venison to eat, she confirmed.
He nodded. I was drowning, Jenny, and empty at the same time. And you were a lifeline, one I never thought I'd find. You gave me a reason to live. When I didn't have one. I needed you. But you didn't need me. You were rich, beautiful, smart. What could I offer you?
Beautiful.
And what am I? Selfish, that's what. I shouldn't have asked you to marry me. But I couldn't help myself. Jenny's eyes widened.
You regret your proposal?
I wanted to marry you. He assured her. I just thought you would refuse. The question was my way to end our relationship before it went too far.
But you said yes. I don't understand, Leo. What are you talking about?
You should be queen, and so much more.
But I couldn't provide any of the things you deserve.
Many thought I was the front runner for the crown, but I knew better. Rochelle is such a mess, and if I'm not able to properly administer my own finances, why would the bishop put me in charge of an entire kingdom?
Leo, my love, I don't care about being queen. It's you I want. Only you.
Is it? Is that all? What about children, Jenny? And you'd be such a wonderful mother. Your children would grow up to be strong, determined and honest. I can never give you that. I can't give you children. I can't give any woman children. To be honest, I can't do much of anything. Swords are dangerous things, and in battles men have lost eyes, arms, and legs. I was wounded years ago, in a nameless battle at an insignificant creek. A handful of monks nursed me at a little monastery. I never told anyone, and neither have they, for which I was grateful. But I should have told you. It was wrong for me to accept your hand in marriage, knowing I couldn't be a real husband.
His beard wriggled as his lips folded, his mouth quivering.
It's just that. I fell so deeply in love with you, Jenny. And I was going to tell you, even if it meant you'd leave me. I lied, but at least I didn't tether you to me forever. The bishop will grant an annulment since the marriage was never consummated.
You do love me,
Jenny said as tears fell. With all my heart, dear girl. That's why I want you to have your freedom.
I don't want freedom.
You don't? What do you want? I want a goddamn double bed.
She grabbed hold of that bristly face and kissed him hard. His arms closed around her again. Chapter 29 Winter's Daughter.
I suppose you two were involved, were the first words out of Evelyn's mouth as she poured her obligatory morning tea.
Indirectly, Adrian replied. The lids came off the food. That morning's thank you to Novron had been a mere communal bowing of heads. As usual, the breakfast table was impeccable and laden with a feast fit for kings, emperors, and at least one pair of very quiet thieves. Evelyn didn't look at either of them, focusing instead on the amber stream spilling into her porcelain cup.
The Surette will be coming soon. Such a thing happening in their own backyard must be addressed. They're not known for being prudent. It's likely they'll seek justice, and it won't matter who they choose to hold responsible.
She looked up.
A pair of no-account foreigners would be tops on their list. I think it best if the two of you return from whence you came.
You're kicking us out? Adrian asked.
Yes,
she said simply, and with an ever so curt nod.
I am.
Evelyn set her spoon down sharply and frowned.
Truth is, I've already rented your room to someone else. So please pack your things and be out by midday. Thank you.
Adrian stared at her and smiled.
You're concerned about us, aren't you?
Evelyn glared back.
Don't be ridiculous. You're abominable people, and I'll not have you spoiling my house with your unsavory ways any longer. There. You wanted the truth? You have it. Stop smiling. I'm not doing this for you. I'm not. Stop it!
A knock at the door ended the one-sided debate as Evelyn stood up and, with an exasperated huff, marched to her home's entrance.
Hello!
A loud voice bellowed.
Oh, good gracious, Evelyn gasped. Your ladyship!
Royce and Adrian abruptly stood. Leaving the dining room, they entered the foyer at the same time as the Duchess of Rochelle, who was dressed in a long black gown, black shawl, and a matching wide-brimmed hat. The sort that demanded special care when moving in tight spaces. Large though she was, her presence was twice as big. She commanded attention like a loud bee in a small room. Her face, round and happy, beamed a smile that made crescent moons of her eyes. Evelyn smoothed a lace doily that was already perfectly placed.
I'm so sorry. I had no idea you were coming. Please forgive this terrible mess.
Oh, nonsense, my good lady, the Duchess said. I'm the one who should be apologizing, dropping in unannounced at this hour after such a tragedy. I wouldn't be the slightest bit surprised if you turned me away, kicked me to the gutter. A fine woman such as yourself would expect that I know better than to act so abominably.
Evelyn
stammered. Lost.
She's met a match, Royce whispered to Hadrian. But you see, I do have a reason, and while it might not be readily apparent, nor may you find it entirely important, I assure you that to me it most certainly is. And, being the Duchess of this city, that counts for something, doesn't it? Of course it does. So, I do hope you will pardon this intrusion.
The large woman pushed deeper into the home, sweeping the hem of her gown to make certain it wasn't stepped on. As she moved clear of the doorway, Hadrian spotted an elegant carriage waiting on the street, and a surprisingly large contingent of armed soldiers, including Roland Wyberg, working as the woman's security detail.
I'm looking for two...
The Duchess spotted them and smiled.
There you are, aren't you?
She said this as if she expected some sort of answer, but neither Royce nor Hadrian had any clue how to respond. The pause took only a single beat as her smile widened. She spread her hands toward them.
My saviors!
She crossed the room and enveloped Hadrian in a hearty embrace. No bear could do better. Apparently she didn't remember his comment about Royce and hugging, for she took hold of him as well. Royce went rigid, enduring the embrace as best he could.
"Our pleasure, your ladyship,"
Hadrian replied. "To you, dear boys, I'm Jenny, your most grateful damsel in distress. I thought you would like to know. My husband sent men up the eastern slope to look for any signs of Vilar. They found the ruins, burned and destroyed, along with two bodies."
"Two?" Royce asked.
"Vilar and the original inhabitant, Falkirk de Roche, a first century monk after whom the river and city were named. De Roche was in a tomb under the dome. Vilar, on the other hand, well, I'm guessing it was Vilar, was burned beyond recognition. They also found the inanimate statue of Novron. That monster kills nearly every noble in the city. Armand Calder and I came within a heartbeat of becoming two more Spring Day casualties."
Evelyn, who still hadn't found her tongue, continued to stare.
"Now then, if I know my father, my rescue wasn't his only request. I'm sure your remuneration is contingent upon returning me to his side. Well, that's not going to happen. My husband loves me, and I him, and I'm not going anywhere." She held out a sealed parchment, and Hadrian took it. "So, here is a letter for my father, explaining that I'm safe and couldn't be happier, and that he should pay you the full amount he promised. But just in case he doesn't see it that way..." She turned and bellowed, "Wentworth!" A little man with his hair in a ponytail rushed forward and held out a purse. Royce took it. "Inside, you'll find 75 gold tenants to hold you over and pay for expenses. I'd give more, but it's no longer just my money, you understand. My husband and I are going to get the city's finances in shape, and we have to watch our expenses. Still, I wanted to make sure you weren't left empty-handed. So please accept this along with my undying gratitude."
"Thank you," Hadrian said.
"Oh no, dear boy, thank you. If not for your intervention, I'd be dead. My husband would be heartbroken, and Alban wouldn't have such a fine new king."
"Has the bishop crowned your husband?"
Evelyn asked. "Ha ha! No, no. Rochelle will just have to be content with us here. My husband took himself out of the running when he didn't show up at the feast. Apparently, finding me was more important than a crown. No, the bishop chose Armand Calder, the only noble to attend the feast and live. He might walk with a limp for the rest of his life, but it looks like he will make a complete recovery. He seems like a decent sort, which is good, and he likes me, which is better. Alban is in need of many changes, and I think King Armand will listen to my ideas about reform. Did you know Mercator Sicara?"
They both nodded.
"Remarkable lady. She died trying to get my letter to Leo, didn't she?"
"Yes," Royce said.
The Duchess nodded. "That poor woman. All she wanted was a better life for her people."
The Duchess raised her hand and shook a finger.
"I'm going to ensure the Mere are treated better. In Rochelle, if no place else. Leo and I are going to make this city a beacon for the rest of the world. A safe haven for the Mere, the Calaeans, and the little bearded folk. When people see the prosperity that harnessing so many talents can produce, they'll surely want to emulate our success. Well, I really must be going. So... thank you again, Hadrian Blackwater and Royce..." "Royce? I'm sorry, but I didn't catch your last name. What is it?"
Royce sighed. "Melbourne."
Evelyn glared. "I thought your names were Baldwin and Grimm."
Returning from the stable that had quartered their animals, Hadrian led their horses down Mill Street. He felt guilty about not checking in on Dancer all week. The stable hand had complained, saying he should have been warned if they were going to abandon their horses for so long. In truth,
The man was probably more disappointed when Hadrian showed up. Any hopes he might have had of selling a set of orphaned animals had vanished. And now he would have to settle for the ridiculously steep caretaking fee that he imposed. Dancer showed no signs of ill-treatment or ill-will, nuzzling Hadrian's shoulder as they walked. Returning to Hemsworth House,
Hadrian found Royce waiting on the stoop out front, surrounded by their gear, like a man washed up on a deserted island.
"What did you do now?" Hadrian asked. "Nothing," Royce said, standing up and throwing Hadrian's saddlebag at him.
Royce hooked a thumb over his shoulder.
"The new occupant is here, and Evelyn wanted me and our things out so we didn't upset her."
"Her?"
"Yep."
He wore an odd smirk, part surprised, part amused.
"The new guest is that mere mother who told us about the place."
Hadrian put his little finger in his ear and made a show of wiggling it before pulling it out and saying,
"Sorry, sounded like you said Evelyn let her room to a mere."
Royce nodded.
"Don't know how she did it either. Tracked the mere down somehow. I suppose she's lived here her entire life and knows this city pretty well. Old woman is full of surprises."
Royce tossed his own bag on his horse, but before tying it, he lifted and hooked the stirrup on the horn, double-checking the cinch.
"Seriously?"
Hadrian leaned on Dancer, shaking his head in disgust.
"You had to check? You don't think I know how to cinch a saddle?"
Royce didn't even look up as he ran fingers along the strap, checking its tension.
"No, I don't." "Trust. You have to learn to trust people, Royce."
He dropped the stirrup without making any changes.
"No, I don't."
They finished lashing bags to their mounts. The animals stood impatiently, stomping hooves to express their desire to be on the road. Along the street, the milkman was back to delivering his jugs, and a flower girl was going door to door with a basket of fresh-cut purple pansies. Only a day later, and the city was back to old routines. Hadrian pulled himself up onto Dancer and grasped his reins. But Royce hesitated. He had his things secured, but remained staring up at the window of what had been their room.
"Forget something."
"The rug."
"What rug?" "Oh, wait. You're not serious."
"It's just that it would definitely fit nicely through that window and hit the street with hardly a sound." Royce looked up and down the thoroughfare.
"There are never any constables on this street.
I bet we could sell it in Little Gurham for 5 gold, maybe 6.
"I'm leaving."
Hadrian started to urge Dancer into the traffic, then stopped.
"What?"
Royce asked.
"You're having second thoughts about the rug, aren't you?"
Hadrian gave him a sharp look.
"No."
He pointed across the street at a little pug-nosed dog sitting on a patch of recently turned earth.
"Must be a stray. I've seen that dog around here a lot.
I wish I had some food."
"It's not a stray. It has a collar," Royce said,
and continued to stare. Then his eyes narrowed and a stunned look filled his face.
"That's not possible."
"What's not?"
Royce abandoned his horse and crossed the street.
Royce famously hated dogs, and, thinking he might harm the animal, Hadrian leapt off his mount and raced over, catching up just as Royce bent down to study the little mangy pup's collar.
"I can't believe it."
"What?"
Hadrian asked.
"It's Mr. Hipple."
"No, that's not possible. You don't mean..."
Royce nodded.
"Lady Martell's dog. The one who sounded the alarm at Hemley Manor and nearly got poor Ralph the guard killed.
How could that dog possibly be here?"
Hadrian looked around at the unkempt field filled with crooked posts.
"This is a cemetery. A pauper's graveyard. Maybe this is Lady Martell's grave."
"Lady Martell wouldn't be buried in a pauper's grave in Ulburn. She's the wife of a wealthy Mellangar lord."
"But didn't Puck say something about the diary belonging to a monk named Falkirk?"
Hadrian asked.
"No, he said the diary was written by someone named Falkirk,
and that she got it from a monk.
Whoa! That's really weird. Wonder what she's doing here, and how she died.
Hadrian looked at the dog sadly.
That's one loyal pet.
I've heard stories about things like this. The dog gets so attached that it waits on its owner's grave for them to come back. Some end up dying because they just can't leave.
Royce didn't say anything. He merely stared at the dog and the grave.
Maybe we should take Mr. Hipple with us, Hadrian said, bending down and reaching out. The little mongrel with the flat face and folded ears snapped at him.
Or not.
They returned to their horses and climbed up.
Perhaps Evelyn will adopt him,
Hadrian said hopefully.
Or maybe he'll be crushed under the wheels of a milk wagon. I'm not sure which would be the worse fate,
Royce added.
The streets were just as congested as on the day they had arrived, but this time the current was all in one direction. Out.
Like Royce and Hadrian, everyone was leaving the city, heading home. At the bottom of the hill, they found that the plaza had been cleaned. The sound of hammering announced that the door to the gallery was being worked on, and the bells of Grom Gallimus were chiming on time. But no vendors had set up shop. In their place, flowers had been laid out in bunches around the empty pedestal where a 17-foot statue of Novron once stood. Wreaths, candles, and lovingly drawn portraits were mixed in with the bundles of recently gathered blossoms. The odd thing, no delineation existed between the memorials for servants and nobles. No line separated the privileged from the poor. Grief blended them all together, ignoring differences as readily as death had.
"Don't understand how all this connects,"
Hadrian said, as they waited to cross the bridge to Governor's Isle behind a trio of wagons filled with families.
How could reading the diary of a several-thousand-year-old monk get Lady Martell and Virgil Puck killed?
Maybe some ancient ghost wants his book back.
Which brings up another mystery.
What?
Who killed Erasmus Nim?
Royce shrugged.
I suppose a golem got him.
Hadrian shook his head. Only Villar, Griswold, and Erasmus knew how to raise them. You were chasing Villar across rooftops when Erasmus died.
So, it must have been Griswold.
Nope, he'd run away from the cemetery. Besides, the two of them were friends. He'd have no reason to kill him.
I have a friend, and I think about killing him all the time,
Roy said with a straight face.
Oh, so you admit it now. We're friends.
I never said anything about you. Don't be so presumptuous. The wagon ahead of them began moving, but slowly. They were at the edge of the bridge where the big gargoyle pediment Royce had perched on was still guarding the entrance to Governor's Isle. Hadrian looked around at the congested city of towers and grotesque statues dominated by the cathedrals and bridge spires. Even in the daylight, with the many shadows cast by the tall buildings, the old city felt dark. Who knew what other secrets it kept to itself?
Royce turned sharply around in his saddle and looked behind.
What?
Hadrian asked, looking back as well. But he saw only the city and more throngs of people.
Nothing. What is it?
Royce gave a second glance back and sighed. I just thought of something.
What?
Why Lady Martell might have been buried in an unmarked grave. It's because her body wasn't claimed. No one identified her.
I think that's obvious. If they'd known who she was, her body would have been sent back to Hemley Manor.
And why do you think that was? I mean, why didn't anyone identify her?
Shock crossed Hadrian's face.
You don't mean...
Royce nodded.
What if Lady Martell didn't have a face?
Hadrian grimaced and pulled his blue scarf tighter.
Crossing the river, they started up the far hills, heading west. When they reached the crest, they turned back for a final look. From that distance, The city, nestled in the valley, surrounded by the mountains and the sea, appeared quaint, even romantic.
What's that up there?
Royce pointed to what appeared to be a fortress down the coast. The castle was nothing but an outline on the top of a distant mountain, but even from that far away, it appeared intimidating, dangerous, powerful.
Blithen Castle, Hadrian said. I think that's where they imprisoned Glenmorgan III, and it's now headquarters to the Surrett Knights. Creepy place. Want to go look?
Royce pulled up his hood.
No. Let's get home. I'm never coming back here.
Hadrian laughed.
Never say never on any endeavor. Quit it. It sounds like a dare to gods that don't care. I mean it. If the likes of us prosper, fail, or falter, you are seriously annoying me now. It matters not while they roll with laughter on an altar.
Royce kicked his horse and trotted off up the road. Hadrian looked back once more at the city. He thought of Seton and the night he first met her amidst the smell of blood and the cries of widows. He remembered his father, who'd made him butcher a chicken, the first life he took. And he thought back on his years of war and slaughters within the arenas of Calais. At our miserable, sad little lives. Royce was right. They were never coming back here again.
This has been an Audible Studios production of The Disappearance of Winter's Daughter, written by Michael J. Sullivan, performed by Tim Gerard Reynolds. Author's note performed by Michael J. Sullivan. Executive producers Jarrett Lee and Mike Charzik. Producer Neil Basic. Copyright 2017 by Michael J. Sullivan. Sound recording copyright 2017 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.